This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. The new film Sideways is being toasted throughout Hollywood as a shoo-in for an Oscar nomination. It's the story of a wine-soaked road trip that the New Yorker magazine calls a comedy poised at the edge of despair. Sideways is directed by Alexander Payne, who also made Election, Citizen Ruth, and About Schmidt. The film is based on a novel by my guest, Rex Pickett. Before writing Sideways, Pickett spent 20 years as a screenwriter and sometime director. Sideways was unpublished until Payne read a copy and decided he had to put it on the screen. The central character, Miles, is a chronically depressed, unpublished novelist and wine buff. He's taking his college friend Jack on a road trip to the Santa Barbara wine country the week before Jack is to be married. Jack is a big puppy dog of a guy, a washed-up actor who charms women easily and is determined to finish off his bachelor days in style. Here's the scene as Miles and Jack set off on their trip.
No, don't open that now. No. It's warm. Jack, that is a 1992 Byron.
Right.
It's really rare, okay? I've been saving it.
All right.
Please don't
open
it. Oh, Jack! Half of it gone.
Hey, shut up, okay? Here's to a great week. Come on.
Yes, absolutely. Despite your crass behavior, I'm actually glad we're getting this time together.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I was beginning to think it was never going to happen.
Man, that's tasty.
That's 100% Pinot Noir, single vineyard. They don't even make it anymore.
The narrator in this novel is a wine lover, a golfer who has trouble selling a novel. I mean, this guy is and is traveling with his roommate from San Diego State. You also went to, I guess, UC San Diego. So this feels like you, huh?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's written in first person, and I had failed with a novel that didn't get published, and I had really hit rock bottom, and a lot of other things were going wrong in my life, and I just basically threw in everything in the kitchen sink. So it was almost my swan song to Hollywood. People think of me as a novelist, but I'd written and directed a couple features, and I'd mostly written screenplays, so I tried to reinvent myself as a novelist, and it wasn't working, and I gave it my Hail Mary shot. That's the God's truth, Dave.
This book was your Hail Mary shot?
Yeah, absolutely. If this didn't happen, I was gone.
Well, let's talk a little about the story here. I mean, in this, the one character, the actor, is determined to have a great time before he gets married. He's very confident and aggressive with women.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator, Miles, is much more fraught with anxiety about the whole thing, doesn't think it's right for them to be fooling around. I kind of can't bring himself to play the courting game. He's sort of so caught up in his own insecurities. Is that what you were like on a trip?
I think so. I mean, I was in the early 90s. My now ex-wife and I drifted apart. We'd made some films together, and we're very close still to this day, and I adore. And I did some things that probably weren't good in a marriage, and I regret it. And I'm just being honest with you. And so, even though this novel is fiction, the events in it are fiction, I wanted to set up a situation where I just, wanted to comment on male behavior in the case of Jack, and the fact that Miles is disapproving, and it makes it difficult for him to establish a relationship with the person Jack is, having the affair with, because she's the best friend of this woman he's interested in. So he's put in a compromised situation, which creates, tension and drama.
I wonder if men who, and when I was single, I was in this category, didn't find it particularly easy to take the initiative with women they didn't know, need someone with them who kind of throws caution to the wind and plunges them into situations that they're nervous about because they're insecure, they don't want to take the emotional risk of it. Do you think guys like us need a Jack to drag us into things that we're afraid of?
Yeah, I guess I just heard this term wingman. I guess it's been around. I guess he's the ultimate wingman. I used to say something, it's pure hyperbole, but I've said 90% of the women, single women out there, are dating 10% of the men, because they're the Jacks in the world who will just, they have a certain charisma about them, they have a certain half glass full quality about them that they will just open themselves up. I'm, if in fact you're describing yourself, I'm like you. I'm shyer. It takes me a lot longer. I need a lot of signals. I need, I need the woman to actually make the first move in most cases. So, I think we, the Mileses of the world, need the Jacks in the world in order if they're going to, come out.
The character the Miles that's in the movie is not a particularly good golfer. I noticed that the Miles who's in your book is a pretty darn good golfer. Which are you?
Well, I had my handicap down to 2, so I like to think I'm a pretty good golfer. I played a lot of golf, and it's kind of funny. I guess they spent $2,000 to give Paul golf lessons, and he was terrified. And they could have paid me nothing, and I would have, I think, done a better job. He has a horrific golf swing. It's so bad, I don't think they would even let him on the golf course. But it kind of works in the movie because he's so frustrated with his life. He might as well also be frustrated with the game that's the most frustrating game on the planet. Actually, just a little anecdote, the golf shot that he hits back at the foursome when you see the movie, and
I think that's a great story. Why don't
set
you
it up
for those who haven't seen the movie? Why don't you describe the scene?
Well, this is a scene right out of the novel. I mean, the two of them are arguing and bickering about something, and his frustration, and Jack's trying to, you know, coax him out and, you know, have him feel a little more, you know, optimistic about his future. And this group behind them hit a ball into him, which on a golf course is just is rude. It's unheard of. You don't do it. And this has actually happened to me. And Miles goes over and picks up the golf ball and just hits it right back at them, which is vaguely dangerous. And I've done that before. And so when he got there, I was on the set that day, and they actually had me hit that golf shot, which is my favorite moment in the movie.
In movies where stunts are controlled, but usually right. by professional stunt guys, they actually had you right. place a golf ball and then hit, what a 3-wood back,
yeah.
like 200-yard back.
That's the way it should have been, but for the, you know, the sake of, you know, movie distances, 200 yards away, you would never have seen them, so they put them only 100 yards away, and it was kind of a trick golf shot. I had to choke way down on a 3-iron and really hit it low. It was kind of dangerous because I was really rifling golf balls at these four people who were sitting up there, and one of them hit the golf cart. But they made it look like Paul hit the shot, but I don't think anyone who sees his swing would ever think he could hit it.
Well, for anybody who doesn't play golf, I can testify that's really hard to do. Most people almost hit people by accident. It's much harder to do on purpose. The character Miles in the book also refers to carrying around Xanax, which I guess is an anti-anxiety medication, mm-hmm. and having had recent hospitalizations. I mean, have you had that kind of a troubled emotional history yourself?
And it's not that troubled. In the early 90s, my mother had a stroke, and my younger brother took over her care and kind of gutted all her money. And you know, as I said, my wife and I, who had had a partnership making films together, we drifted apart, and I went down to take over my mother's care, and then I got a phone call that my agent had passed away from AIDS. It was a tough time, and I started having panic anxiety, and so I found, you know, it's medication, but I don't take it on a daily basis. I may go 2 months and not even take one, but if I'm feeling panicky, you know, I'll take a half of one and try to overcome it. The only time it really surfaces now is flying. That's the only time, but...
So you have difficulty with flying, Rex? That's a phobia.
Yeah, I think I just got over it because I was in New York for 3 weeks, and I was gonna they held me on for a film benefit there, and I was gonna take an Amtrak back. So I got on an Amtrak out of New York, and I had a luxury sleeper car, and it was about half the size of the bathroom I was staying in the hotel where I was staying, and I started feeling kind of panicky on the train. I couldn't sleep. I was being pitched back and forth. And then at 3 a.m, the train caught on fire, and they had to call 911. It was an absolute nightmare. So I detrained myself in Chicago and called my girlfriend. She flew out, and we flew back. And I had never been so happy to be hurtling at 35,000 feet or where at 500 miles an hour. So I think Amtrak cured me of my aerophobia.
Wow. So, you found a new cure for fear of flying, set the train on fire, huh?
Well, I any form of travel like that, I mean, where you don't have any control. But no, I think, you know, I'm pretty much over it now.
In the book Sideways, these two characters, Miles and Jack, are on a wine-tasting road trip in the Santa Barbara wine country, which is almost a character in this novel. And what do you think this setting and this world of wine appreciation brings to the story?
Well, I think, you know, were these two guys on a bachelor trip just drinking beer, it wouldn't have the sense of, I don't know, romance about it. I mean, Miles has found I've read a lot of reviews and people say different things. He seems to have found a refuge from his depression and his loneliness in wine. But really, he has a passion for something that you can really have a passion for, which I have a real passion for. I mean, there are so many different countries of origin and varietals and different winemakers and different years. And there's a whole book side to wine appreciation that is just as fascinating to me as actual experience. And I think he's eager to involve other people in that passion. In this case, Jack, who really doesn't have that appreciation. So, and I love the beauty of the terrain. There's a feeling, I don't know, seeing the movie, but I've never been to Tuscany, but it looks a little bit like a kind of a Southern California version of Tuscany. So I'm really in, as a writer, I really believe in setting where I've been, not trying to create a place. And I really believe in real places, real wine tasting. And I don't even think it would have worked if it was Napa Sonoma. I mean, God bless them, they make great wines up there. But there was something unique. I think a lot of people haven't discovered this little corner of the world. I know Alexander really, he moved up there 3.5 months before he even began shooting the film.
Alexander Payne, who is the director
Alexander
of the film.
Payne, the director and writer, co-writer with his partner Jim Taylor. And he moved up there, and he just steeped himself in that train. And he loved the verisimilitude of the locations. I mean, the locations weren't made up. There really is a hitching post, and there really is a Foxen winery and in Sanford winery. All these places are up there, and you can actually see the movie and read the book and go up and take a tour of the book and the movie.
But, you know, it's interesting because I'm somebody who enjoys a glass of wine with dinner, but I don't really know anything about it. But this movie and the book were filled with these phrases like the wine was richly oaked with just enough forward fruit. And I don't know what any of this stuff means, but when I hear it and read it, I can taste red wine. It sort of adds some kind of sensual quality to the experience.
Right. Well, I mean, there are like two camps of people who are wine appreciators of what we call, or what I've actually termed, wine speak. And I'm in the camp where Robert Parker is like the great hyperbole artist of this. And, you know, he speaks grandiloquently, almost sometimes ridiculously, where he'll say, for instance, a certain Shiraz tasted like melting asphalt. I mean, I don't know if he's ever had melting asphalt. But I love the poetry of the language, where people are really trying to reach for descriptions, as absurd and as exaggerated as many of them are. As being a writer, I love that. I love reaching for it myself. And as you get into your first and second and third glass, you become ever more glib. And I like it. And I get a lot of it from a friend of mine who taught me a lot about wine, Julian Davies. We would go back and forth with it. And we really enjoyed that that kind of wine speak repartee, as it were.
One other example, the wine was dark and unfiltered, but it had a kind of feral richness that called to me. Was that your own phrase?
Yeah, that is.
Very nice.
That's from the novel. They didn't use it in the movie. But they used a lot of other quaffable but transcendent, quaffable but far from transcendent, that's right out of the book, and some other ones. They riffed on it. Alexander is and Jim, Alexander in particular really knows wine, and he learned even a lot more making this movie.
What wine was that? The dark and unfiltered but feral richness.
I think that was a Sanford 99 La Rinconada. It was actually one of the first wines I had up there. It's one of the great wineries up there, and they have a great tasting room. In fact, the opening scene where Miles is showing Jack, you know, how to actually go through tasting or whatever, and it's a little over the top for me, but the audience really likes it. That is actually at the Sanford Tasting Room, and the guy pouring the wine actually works there, Chris Burrows. He's a great guy. But the La Rinconada is one of their high-end Pinot Noirs, and it's just a very, very thrilling wine. I remember going up there with Alexander and Sandra Oh, his wife, and some other people involved in the movie, and we sat at a picnic table and we drank it. It called to me with its feral richness.
One of the lines from the book, which is in the movie, is when Miles and his friend Jack are about to go into a restaurant for a double date, which Miles is pretty anxious about. And he says, look, if they order Merlot, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with Merlot? Do you ever drink Merlot?
Well, there are great Merlots. I mean, Chateau Petrus is 100% Merlot, and it's one of the great wines and one of the most expensive wines around. The Merlot that we get in California is really for unsophisticated palates. It's a soft, flabby, uncomplex wine. It's known in Bordeaux, of course, as a blending varietal. It actually softens the harsher, more tannic Cabernet. It's not really, with few exceptions like, you know, Chateau Petrus, it's not really meant to be 100% used 100% in a given wine. It's a blending varietal, and there are good Merlots here, like Duckhorn Vineyards up in Napa, and there are other ones. So I'm not totally against Merlot, but I find it to taste similar from bottle to bottle. Whereas Pinot Noir, which is the grape I absolutely adore, is so different from bottle to bottle. Its expression is so different, and you can go broke chasing it. But I sort of love that aspect of it.
One of the things that Miles does when he's struggling to get over it is one night when he's on a double date with Jack and these two women, he's had deeply into his cups of the grape, and he secretly goes off and phones his ex-wife. Jack says to him, "Did you drink and dial? Did you drink and dial? And where did that phrase come up with? Where did that phrase come from?"
I don't know if it's. I'm not quite sure where the phrase comes. It might be one of those phrases they use in AA or something. I wouldn't know, but it's. You know, sometimes when you've had a little too much, you start, you know, calling friends or whatever. That never really happened to me in real life, but it is right from the novel. There's no question. I felt like, you know, there was something that was, he almost couldn't deal with it sober, but once he'd had, you know, he had enough grape in it, it sort of liberated him enough to call her and confront her on the fact that, you know, she... You know, and he just wanted to know. And there's something that's a very tough scene for me to watch. It's very, very, very painful. And I love the way they directed it, too, using the camera angles they did. They really gave you the sense that Miles was really not, not in his right mind at that moment.
You know, it's ironic that you've written a lot of Hollywood screenplays. I mean, you've been doing this for a lot of years, and some have been produced. But... your biggest movie is going to come from this novel, which was unpublished until it was adapted by Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor. It's a very dialogue-rich novel, I'll say. What made you want to tell this story in a novel rather than a screenplay?
Well, actually, Dave, I originally wrote it as a screenplay, and it didn't work for me, and it so didn't work, I didn't even show it to my agent. A lot of writers ultimately get representation out there should take note. Don't show everything to your agent. But there was something in the story, and I started to write a short story in the first person of Miles where he goes to a wine tasting that kind of goes out of control. And when I got to the end of that short story, I thought, oh, my gosh, I can have Jack show up now, and they're ready to take off. He's waiting for them at this. And it suddenly everything took off from there. Once I found that first-person voice of Miles, which was not evident in the screenplay at all, I had like... I don't want to sound pretentious here, but I felt like I had the soul, what became the soul of the book, and ultimately, I think, to some extent, the soul of the movie, and it just changed everything, and that's what made me want to write it as a book at that point. Plus, in writing a book, I had to go further in terms of creating events, and I was kind of playing off of Murphy's Law, you know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, and will go wrong badly, and I kept like trying to up the ante on that, and I pushed it much further than the screenplay, but it was that first person narrating voice was the galvanic charge, the thing that put me over the top in terms of writing it, and I wrote it very fast from that point.
You wrote another novel, I think it was called La Purisma, right, which is the purism in Spanish, right?
La Purisima.
La Purisima. And I've read that you shopped at a lot of places through a couple of agents, and like Miles, the character in Sideways, ultimately couldn't get it published. Right. What did that do to your sense of yourself as a writer?
Well, that was the first novel I wrote that tried to reinvent myself. And La Prisma, it's actually the name of the golf course that I would go up and play, and there was nobody. It's a great golf course up there, and there was nobody on it midweek, and it was a place to really. Get away from the burdens of my life and everything else. And it was really a mystery novel. It was about a down-and-out screenwriter who meets this older, semi-retired private investigator, and the older guy slowly draws him into a mystery that leads down through Hollywood. And at the end, he kind of matriculates as a private investigator. And to me, it was almost a parallel to what I was trying to do. I was trying to reinvent myself as a novelist, and in this case, a mystery, which would have, successive, adventures with these two characters. And the good news is it got me a great agent. My agent, prior to that, I said, had passed away from AIDS, and it got me a terrific agent, Jess Taylor, and we shopped it around for a year, and we got very close at a couple of places, but it was tough. And so I threw all of that into the Miles character, the frustration of getting close with something, and then it just doesn't happen for whatever reason.
What is your life like these days in with this kind of success?
Well, I live in the same rent control house I do in Santa Monica, but instead of having process servers at my door that I would never answer and, you know, having rejection letters coming in the mail, it's it hasn't really changed that much. I can buy some wines I normally couldn't afford, and I can eat out occasionally, which I couldn't do before. But from the standpoint of writing, it hasn't changed. I still have to go inside. I still have to really draw on something that is there. I mean, in some ways, there's a lot of distractions right now. It's very easy to like go on the internet and type in sideways and Rex Pickett or Alexander Payne and see all these wonderful articles come up and everything. So it's distracting. And the key right now is just to really focus on writing the next thing for me. So really, my life hasn't changed that much, to be honest with you.
Well, Rex Pickett, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Dave.
Novelist and screenwriter Rex Pickett. His book Sideways is now a film directed by Alexander Payne.